He made his valedictory appearance before a Senate committee last July in the role of an elder statesman. He was there to testify about a bill which would have required that White House staffers be answerable to Congress, and he took the opportunity to look back philosophically on his life and his career.
In this city of rumors, the current name of this bill is not that of its sponsors, the Fulbright-Cranston bill, but the Kissinger bill. Whatever the purpose of its sponsors, its practical consequences could be to cause useless friction within the government of the United States, hamper the conduct of one of its most vital functions, and increase the harassment of and difficulties of the president and those citizens who are serving their country in the executive branch, as well as gentlemen serving it in the legislative and judicial branches. What a picture would be created of a president in the center of a web of secret machination. What a picture presented to the world of a government as bizarre, absurd, and divided by tragic vendettas as the King of Morocco's birthday party. In short, what a hell of a way to run a railroad. I remember when I appeared for one solid week before the combined committees on foreign affairs and military affairs on the question of the removal of General MacArthur. This was an executive hearing. They had an admiral of the United States Navy there who was supposed to exercise the president's privilege, and he would excise from the stenographic minutes those things which he, the admiral, not the president, but the admiral, thought would interfere with the public safety, and then the press got the whole executive hearing. Therefore, it makes no difference whether the hearing is executive or open. In my lifetime, the Sherman Antitrust Bill was passed 3 years before I was born. This turned over to judges the most complicated of all questions, the regulation of monopolistic practices. And the judges were given as a guide the most confusing phrase ever invented by the mind of man, that contracts and combinations in restraint of trade are illegal. They've been working on it for 80 years and they haven't got any light. No light has been thrown on that question yet.
Well, I certainly am gratified by that statement because that's exactly what I think about it, about the Sherman Antitrust Law.
Well, just recall what's happened in our lifetimes, Senator. The dealing with the most complicated thing in the world, race relations, came out of the judiciary who took over this problem themselves and found, in a phrase, the equal protection of the laws, a way to deal with this complicated question, which isn't the one to deal with. We then got on, earlier in my life, to the matter of intoxicating liquors. That complicated question suddenly resolved itself into what was interstate commerce. And everybody rattled around about, is this bottle of whiskey in the original package? If it is, it can go into New Mexico and be sold to Indians, so far as the state is concerned. This is a silly way to deal with a complicated question.
Dean Acheson, dead at the age of 78.
I think the president ought to get together with the Speaker of the House, and they ought to have a bipartisan commission that will start work right now to make recommendations for the president after the election as to what he should do in his new budget for fiscal year 1986.
While we are skipping around, we'll go to foreign policy, and I realize I'm asking these questions quickly and hoping, but you're very good at quick answers. What about the Marines? Can we just take them out of Lebanon? The president says no. Many of his critics say, come on, let's just get them out.
Barbara, I support the Marines being there at the present time. But I believe the White House has to tell the Lebanese politicians, stop sitting over in Geneva bickering and not coming to an answer.
What if it doesn't work? Should we just get them out?
If they don't get a government together, if they don't establish domestic security in Lebanon, then in a reasonable period of time,
what?
The president has to pull out the Marines.
What's reasonable? That's
well, I'm not going to pick whether it's a week or a month or 2 months, but the pressure ought to be on the Lebanese politicians to establish a government and to establish some degree of physical safety in Lebanon. Then our Marines can come out. If they, if the Marines are only there to protect Lebanese politicians, they ought to come out today.
We'll be right back for more conversation with former President Gerald Ford right after this. Chatted. If next week Ronald Reagan decided he was not going to run, if suddenly he does Lyndon Johnson, would you run?
Oh, under no circumstances, Barbara.
Now, I read just recently in an interview that you did with someone that he said, oh, Gerald Ford will run. He's told that to me several times. Under no circumstances.
That's a total no. And under no circumstances would I do it. We've got a lot of fine candidates if the president decides not to run. George Bush, Howard Baker, Bob Dole.
But you think he's going to run, don't you?
Oh, I think so. I hope he does, and I'll campaign for him, and I hope he wins.
Now, what about the Democrats?
Well, I don't really have any inside information. I know them all.
Who do you think? Do you think that Mondale has it wrapped up?
I think former Vice President Mondale has, in effect, the nomination in his pocket right now. The only way that can change, Barbara, is if John Glenn should do well at the Iowa caucus and should do very well in the early primaries, beginning with New Hampshire. If John Glenn does better than the polls indicate, John Glenn could make it a real contest. But
the way you see it now,
as of this morning, I would say Fritz Mondale has it all wrapped up.
Would he be the toughest candidate? Would John
Glenn? He'll be tough. And if the Reagan people think it's going to be a pushover, either with Mondale or anybody else, they better start reconsidering their strategy, because Mondale or Glenn would be very formidable candidates. It's always tough for an incumbent to run, and the Reagan people better assume it'll be a very competitive, close campaign. And that's the way to win. You only get in trouble, Barbara, in a political race when you get overconfident, then you're vulnerable. And I hope the Reagan people are going to assume it'll be very difficult, because it will be, and then I think they'll prevail.
We have the honor and the pleasure and the fun of talking with three former presidents this week and hearing what you have to say, and that's important for the country to hear. You have said at one point that you felt, and I'm quoting, I strongly feel that former presidents should be called on and called on regularly. In your relationship with President Reagan, are you called on regularly? It seems to me, I read that you talk all the time to Jimmy Carter. I don't hear that much about Reagan.
I am called upon by the Reagan administration whenever there's an issue where they are anxious to have an observation or comment. They do keep me well briefed on foreign policy. If I have something that I want to express to the White House, I have no trouble in that capability of communicating. So the relationship is excellent. Now, I had a good relationship, of course, with President Carter, even when he was in office. I talked to him at his request about foreign policy. I supported him on the Panama Canal, on the recognition of China, on several other matters. So, as far as I've seen it,
I have no
complaint at all. In fact, I think the relationship with the Reagan people is excellent.
Thank you for being with us.
Nice to be with you, Barbara.
Please give our best to Mrs. Ford.
I will. She said the same to you.
Thank you.